we want to learn over the next few weeks are the Sichos of Rav Shlomo Hoffman. Okay? Has anybody ever seen this before? Ever. That's what I thought. So that means this is good. We're going to try to expose everybody here to something new, a different teacher of Torah, a unique teacher of Torah that is not so familiar with the American scene. This Sefer, you can buy almost in any Sfarim store nowadays. They've begun to translate this into English as well. This particular volume, these talks that we're going to learn, have been translated as well. So if you want an English to go along with it as well, it's available in stores. You can follow along. What we're going to do is each week I'm going to say over the Sicha outside. I brought on the sources in front of you are the Mar Makomas that he discusses. And we're going to say it outside. And then on your own, if you want the Hebrew, you can go get the Hebrew and go through the Hebrew on your own afterwards to review it. If you want the English, go get the English. You can review the English on your own. And during the week, you should chazer it. You should review it, go through it, and think about the ideas. He's talking about so many important ideas in Hashkafa, in psychology. We'll talk about Emuna, what it means to be a human being, how to grow in all different ways. So who is this very holy-looking Jew on the front of this book? So Rav Shlomo Hoffman was a therapist who was very, very involved in the Haredi community in Eretz Yisrael, and he had the ear of many, many Gedolim, Rav Shach, Rav Kahanim, and the Panamish Rav. He was a very close Talmud of Rav Isaac Sher, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka in Bnei Brak, and he was a tremendous pikeach. He had tremendous insight into human personality. His job was not giving talks and writing books. He didn't write this. All these talks were written up by a Talmud of his after he had passed away, a Rabbi Stein. His job is that he worked for the parole board in Eretz Yisrael. When they needed to decide whether a person was eligible to go to trial or a person was eligible for parole, did he serve his time? He was known throughout the entire country as an expert on reading human psychology, reading people, understanding people, struggles, Emuna, all types of things. He would get calls from Rosh Yeshiva, I have a bachur in my yeshiva who's struggling with this issue, talk to him, can you take care of it? He received calls all over all the time because he was renowned as a brilliant person, a tremendous insight into the human personality. And I think everybody here, we are mature, we're starting our next stage of life, and this is a person I think that we can all learn from and grow from. And here he has to say what it means to be a growing, caring, thinking, sensitive human being who has failings and struggles and how to deal with them and all different types of ideas. Okay? So this is what we're going to learn from, Rav Shlomo Hoffman, and let's start. Should we start? Okay. I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of Hoffmans. But yeah, I don't think in particular. I reading his biography in the beginning, they didn't make a mention of that. Okay. So the first shir, there are 12 shirim in the Sichos, which talk about coping with reality, challenges in life, things that come up that we're not familiar with. The first shir talks about how do we deal with shocking news. How does a person deal with things in life that they came out of nowhere? I didn't know where this came from. This is new to me. And the person who's talking with him gives three examples. He says, how do we deal with, for example, someone who, lo aleinu, comes across in their life, they hear about, or they're connected to someone in suicide. Chas v'shalom, somebody takes their life. That's very shocking. How do I cope? How do I deal with something that didn't occur to me before, something I was not familiar with? How do I overcome that very shocking and shaking information? Or you have somebody in your life who all of a sudden, you observe Chil Shabbos. I see a person who I thought I knew, and they take out their phone on Shabbos. And I never thought they would have done such a thing. Or somebody goes off the derech, a family member, a relative, a friend that you know, all of a sudden just stops being frum. And that shakes you. That's very difficult to swallow. How do I deal with that person? What does that say about me? How am I supposed to handle that? It's keeping me up at night. I'm having thoughts about, you know, could I do that thing as well? And it's making me very nervous. So that's what we're going to talk about today, how to focus on things that are shocking, different, new, make me feel uncomfortable, that I'm not familiar with before. And he says that when a person encounters new things, anything in life that's new, whether it's a style of clothing you never saw before, or a piece of news, a piece of technology you never encountered before, everything that's new to you is shocking. Because your body, your mind, your psychology doesn't know how to cope often with new things. And he says there are a number of ways with how we deal and faced with shocking news. He says the first thing is that we get used to the idea. We'll talk about that. How do we get used to something? The second thing is approaching it intellectually, using our mind, using our intellect to understand something, to learn more about it. When you learn more about something, it makes it less shocking. And the third is projecting calmness, learning how to control our physiology, our body, how to breathe, how to project a sense of calmness, because the way that we act and the way we act physically will impact how we think emotionally as well. Then he's going to go on to talk about the fear that we have of our own failings. When we see other people fail and it makes us upset, it's often because we think that maybe that could be us. And when we encounter failing and sin in other people, we often psychologically say, ooh, maybe that's me. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I could be in that same place as well. He brings a fifth thing, which is about, and he's not going to talk about this, the idea of bringing scary things that are deep inside to the forefront. Confronting scary things can often free a person from fear, right? In psychology, if a person has a fear of heights, so some therapists will say, well, get up in a plane, go up, deal with it, and you'll overcome that fear. He says something very fascinating. He says, in all cultures and societies, we tell our children very scary stories. Did you ever notice this before? In all cultures and societies, we tell our children very scary stories. Think about regular, like, fairy tales, things that we tell our children. Like, there was a Little Red Riding Hood, and she went into the forest, and a wolf ate her grandmother. That's horrifying. It's not like a normal thing you would expose a child to. But if it's like a story, and there's, like, colorful pictures, then it's okay, right? Or we'll tell a story about, like, a gingerbread man who runs away, and then they eat him. That's sick. Like, they ate, like, a little, like, we tell all these very shocking stories. And he says, why do cultures and societies do this? Because what it does is it teaches children to deal with fear earlier on. It brings it to the front. It coaches them on how to cope with fear, how to manage difficulties, trying and traumatic things. But he's not going to talk about this so much. And we're going to move only discuss the first four. Let's talk first about relaxing with habituation, getting used to things. Any change from the norm creates a shock for a person. I get up in the morning, I have the same breakfast, and I have the same coffee, and I get in the car at the same time, and I put on the same music. And when things deviate from that, right, if you ever had to take a carpool with somebody who's not your usual carpool, and they play, like, different music, and their car is, like, a different smell, and, like, they talk about different things, it's, like, very jarring. They're not bad people. I don't think that they're a murderer, but it's not my norm. And we have to deal with things that are not our norm. It can be very jarring and upsetting to us. Young people are shocked and triggered more than adults. And he says it's not because younger people are immature and older people have no feelings. That's not what it is, right? You come and say, Mom, I cannot believe what I saw today. And your mom's like, and? Okay, what's the big deal? It's not because your mother doesn't care or she doesn't have a heart. It's because your mother or your father have experienced more things than you. They're used to these things. But you are younger, and therefore when you see something that you're not familiar with, it's upsetting to you because your body has to process it and deal with those emotions at that time. And when you see people who are anxious and shocked by news, don't become alarmed, right? So you have a friend who encountered something very shocking, very upsetting, and they're shaking. They're very upset. They can't settle down. So he says, don't be alarmed by that. Keep in mind that over time, we naturally relax from shocking information. For hearing new things, your body will naturally cope and begin to calm down as you get used to it. Keep in mind that over time, people naturally relax. He says, even when it comes to death, which is the most painful of all experiences, there's a natural calm that comes over time. Look at this Rashi. This is a Rashi you all know. But when Yosef disappears and Yaakov doesn't know what to do, v'yema'ein lehisnachein, right? Yaakov refused to be comforted in the loss of Yosef. Ein adam mekabel tanchumen, says Rashi, al hachai. A person will not become comforted over someone who's still alive. V'savar shemes, if they think that they've died. Shal hames nigzera gzera. It is dictated from Shemayim. It is in the fabric of creation that when Rachmana Litzlan, a relative, passes away, Shishtakech min alev. Naturally, over time, Hashem made it that we will become less shocked It will become nishtakeach min aleiv. It will become forgotten in the heart. Velo al chai. But that's the whole point, right? Yaakov could not be comforted by Yosef's death because Yosef didn't really die. So the natural occurrence of being comforted over time never occurred to Yaakov. But for a normal case, when a person does pass away, the idea is that, yeah, do you know what? We naturally relax. And that's what this Rashi is telling us. We get very concerned about, right now, I'm so tense, it's so difficult, I'm so upset, I'm so anxious about this. Over time, you will naturally relax. It's a gzeira. It's the way Hashem created the world. Things will naturally get better over time. That's number one about dealing with shocking news. Number two, using our logic. He tells the story in the name of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was the grandfather of Rabbi Soloveitchik from YU. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, listen to this, he says, when his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was an adam gadol, a tzaddik, and the biggest Talmud Chacham in Europe, a tremendous mind, when he got older, towards the end of his life, and he wasn't sick, he began to become very nervous about death. He began to think about dying and what that means, and it made him very anxious. So you know what he did? He began learning the laws of Tumas Ohel. What if a person dies in a building and there's Ohel, there's Tumah that goes into the building? And he began learning the laws in the Rambam and the Halachos that deal with death and Halacha. And Rav Chaim found that it was very calming to him. He relaxed. He wasn't so concerned about it. And Rav Shlomo Hoffman explains that what scares us the most in life is not knowing. That's a very scary thing. What's going to be? What's going to be with this situation? I never encountered this before. How am I going to handle it? What's the future going to hold over here? And he says, the more you use your mind to understand what you don't know, the more calm you can become. The very intellectual involvement in discovering the unknown can be very calming. And that's a second thing we should do to calm ourselves down. Learn about the thing that is making you anxious. Now, we need to be careful here. We're not saying that every single time you have a rash on your pinky, you should WebMD it, and now spend the next five hours going down a rabbit hole that's going to make you think you have Rachman al-San every single type of cancer that's ever occurred before. I'm not saying you should do that. That's not healthy. But if you have an issue in front of you, you have a problem in front of you, you have an anxiety in front of something that's upsetting you, so learn about it. Learn about the thing that's unknown. In a normal case, if a person does get a diagnosis of a real illness, not a rash on your finger, if a person does get a diagnosis of a real illness, so then you can become scared and you begin to shut down. They don't communicate with family. They don't want help from the outside. They're not interested in anybody else. But the more you take the time to learn about that illness and you read up on about it and what are the cures and how do doctors deal with it and how do we cope with it and what's the normal progressive way to understand it, then the more your mind begins to grasp reality. Because before, reality was something you couldn't understand. This is an illness I don't understand about. But the more I learn about it and I relate to it, then the more calm I can become. Intellectual understanding gives you the strength to understand and it lowers the tension. And that is advice number two. I recommend highly a beautiful book called As Long as I Live by Aaron Margalit. Has anybody read this before? You read it before? It's a good book, right? It's an amazing story. Aaron Margalit, Baruch Hashem, is alive and well in Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to ruin the book for you, because I want every single person here to read it. He has a remarkable life story. But a major point in his life story is a particular difficult, twice, battle with cancer. And he writes very strongly about this idea, that when a person struggles with something that is unfamiliar to them, often people shut down and say, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to deal with it, I don't want to confront it. But he said for him personally, and he says, I can't write for everybody else, for him personally, and his remarkable story, which I'll say again, you should all go and read As Long as I Live. For him, he writes very beautifully about how learning about the disease, getting involved in the care of it and the procedures and being medically knowledgeable was very calming for him to be in some sort of control. If someone goes off the derech and there changes their life dramatically, then why don't you learn about what led that person to that? What happened to that person's life? Nobody overnight turns their life upside down and loses their emunah. There has been no such thing ever in the history of mankind, of a person who was a strong ma'amin Hashem on Thursday, and then Friday morning woke up and said, I'm done. I'm not interested in Torah mitzvahs anymore. It happened over time. It was a progression. Little things led to this, that led to that. So if that's shocking to you, that someone you know has a very difficult lifestyle now in a different way, so learn about it. Understand it. And by understanding and learning about the unknown, it will give you a story to explain what's going on. And the lack of understanding is something that's often painful and bewildering. And the way to calm down is to learn to understand. That is number two. Yeah.
What about like a tragedy, though, like where you can't like come to an understanding of like what happened?
Okay, so now we have other tools there. But a person can, even whatever the tragedy may be, a person can, not necessarily that I'm going to know what Hashem is doing. That's, we're not saying we can understand that. But if a person is an accident, there's something that happens, and they want to know, how did that happen to that person? How did that possibly occur? So for some people, it can be calming just to understand the mechanism of what led to that event. What were the physical facts on the ground that led to that event occurring? And that can calm them in saying that, you know, well, that was then, and that's not necessarily going to happen to me, because that was a situation over there where something happened out of their control. Again, obviously, Hashem runs the world, and whatever happens is a gzeira from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But that nervousness, that anxiousness, can often be calmed by simply learning about and understanding what was previously not understandable. The third thing is projecting calmness. He says, if you want to calm others down, you must be calm yourself. Okay? If a friend comes to you and they are anxious, do not get anxious with them. That is not helpful for anybody. It's not helpful for them. And it's not helpful for you. He says, your feelings are contagious. Okay? This is not a referendum on COVID. But he's saying that your feelings are contagious. If you are feeling happy, the people around you will feel happy. And if you are feeling anxious and sad, the people around you will become to feel anxious and sad. Look at the pasuk in Mishlei. Shlomo Melech writes in Mishlei Chav Zayin, Kemayim hapanim lepanim, kein leva adam laadam. Like looking in a reflection in water is the same thing as a heart of one person to another. However you are feeling in your lathe, when you are with other people, they will manifest that same feeling as well. And that's a simple thing. If somebody comes to you and they are upset, you must project calmness if you're going to help them. Words don't help. Because honestly, you're probably not going to think of the right thing to say. That's just percentage-wise, you're not going to say the right thing. But you know what's going to help that person more? You being calm, your emotions, and that's what they're going to sense the most about you. I went to talk, you know, to my friend, and like I was very upset about something, and I don't know what they said, but I don't know, they were so at peace, they were just relaxing, they were just, it was comforting to be around them. Projecting calmness will make a big deal. Often, parents send their phobias and fears to their children without saying anything, right? If a parent has a fear, if a parent has an anxiety about money, then the children will inherit that anxiety about money. Not because it's in their DNA. I don't know if there's a gene that has money, anxiety about money. But the parent is going to give that anxiety over to the child because they are essentially passing it on through their actions. If the parent has a big taiva for kavod, loves, honor, and respect, so then the kid is also going to get that, even if the parent never says a word about it. He doesn't get up and say, I can't believe they didn't honor me at the dinner this year. I gave $100. That's clearly not going to work. But the parent is projecting a sense of kavod. I demand kavod. I don't like it when people don't respect me. I need to be honored all the time. The kid is going to pick up on that at the end of the day. Whether it's about heights or a fear of dogs or failure, whatever the parent feels is going to be passed down to the child because the child is going to pick up on those emotions even if the parent never says a word. That's number three, okay? The fourth thing he talks about is fear of sin and failure. And this is such an important point. He says that why is it that we're shocked when other people do wrong things? Why is it that it's unsettling to me when I observe a lack of shalom bias? I'm at a friend's house for Shabbos. I'm somewhere by a host, and I see that the husband and wife are bickering. And it's like, it's very uncomfortable. Now, it's awkward because you're looking at something you don't feel that you should be privy to see, correct? Right? But there's something else about it, he says. If a person is Mechal Shabbos, they abuse others, they steal. Why does that shake me? I didn't abuse anybody, I didn't steal, I wasn't Mechal Shabbos. Why is that so upsetting to me? So he explains that subconsciously, you feel that you could do the same thing. That subconsciously you think, well, could that be me? Could I be in a house where I would also speak to my spouse that way? Is that something that I could do? Can I also steal? Could I also hurt another human being? And that's very unsettling to the subconscious. There's a pachad, a fear that you will make the same mistake. And this is very shocking to the system. Look at the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Hei. Everyone sees the Gemara there? The Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Hei says, Echad mibnei hachabura shemeis yidagu kol hachabura. If one member of a group of friends passes away, the whole rest of the group will be frightened. The closer you are to the nifter, the more shocking it is to you. We think that we're saddened because of the loss of life, the pain to the family. It's true. All that's true. We are sensitive, feeling human beings. I am upset that someone that I love or knew passed away. And I am upset for the family that no longer has that family member with them. And some of it is true. But the real subconscious issue, says Rosh Shlomo Hoffman, why you're upset, is that you begin to think, well, I'm part of this group. I'm part of this chabura. Is this something that could happen to me? Am I also shayach to such an action or such an event happening? And being exposed to something like death, abuse, something like that, makes us feel that we have to confront that reality as well. Chazal are teaching us that awareness of something should be turned internally. And this is a key lesson over here. When someone passes away, something shocking happens. Don't take that energy and run far away. No, that's not healthy. You need to become internal, become self-aware, understand that everyone passes away at some point, and therefore learn to make the most of your time in this world. Learn to take advantage of that lesson and to take that shocking news and to turn it internally to grow yourself and to become a better person. Everyone has fears, okay? I want to be clear about this. Every single person in this room, including the person who is saying the sentence right now, has fears about all types of things. If you think you are the only person who fears certain things and gets anxious about things, turn to the person to your right and turn to the person to your left, and they also have fears. That is clear according to everybody. Fears of doing something wrong, failing, getting punished, some other negative consequence. No, for religious people, we have yiras hachet. We have a fear of, you know, of doing a mitzvah the right way. We want to serve Hashem properly. We have yiras shemayim. But even non-religious people have fears. Oh, it's only a Jewish thing. Only Jewish people are nervous. It's not true. A person who won't, you know, live on the 13th floor of a building because, you know, 13 is an unlucky number, right? A person who won't have a walk in front of a black cat because black cats are unlucky. All people have fears. You're just going to manifest in a different way. Are we clear about this point? Everybody has fears about different things. The only issue is, what are you going to fear and what are you going to put your effort into at the end of the day? I mean, in Judaism, just the mashal, 13 is not a bad number. It's actually, we don't have bad numbers in Judaism, but it's like a good number, right? 13 is an Echad Mi'odea. 13 is in, you know, 13 is Gematria Echad, Ahava. There's all types of good things that come with 13. So you're just going to manifest that fear in something else that comes up in life. And he says that Pachad can be from all types of things. There can be your shemayim, gehenim, you know, police, physical harm, being yelled at, sickness, not having enough. I'm saying if anybody has had the unfortunate pleasure of being pulled over by a police officer, has anybody had that pleasure before? No? Nobody here? Ever? Yeah, some people? It's okay. So you can only describe, you cannot describe that feeling in your stomach, right? It's a very unique feeling in your stomach. When those lights go on and you have to pull over, right? It's a very specific fear. It's hard to describe. It's a very uncomfortable fear. Now, I'm not afraid the police officer is going to do something to me, but there's a pachad in that scene. There's something about it. Everybody has a pachad about certain things. And then when you get pulled over that one time, every single time you're on the road now, you see like a police car behind you, like, like, what's going on? So everyone has fears about different things. And the more you become scared of that thing, the more you fail. The more you're scared and the more you get involved, the more anxious about that thing, the more you will fail in that area. I'll give you an example. There was the second baseman for the New York Yankees in the 1990s. It was a guy named Chuck Knoblauch. And one game, Chuck Knoblauch had like an easy ground ball to second base. He picked it up and he totally missed the first baseman. And then it was like all over the news and ESPN and the newspapers. And then he was like interviewed about it, and it was a really bad throw. And then the next time it happened, like a few days later, it happened again. And he missed like an easy throw to first base. and he went to psychologists and all type of things. And it got so nuts in his head, he couldn't make a throw to first base that a kid in Little League could do when he's in third grade. And it got so bad, he had to retire from baseball. That's how bad it was. Because he couldn't do, what's the job of a baseball player? To throw a ball from A to B. And he couldn't do that because he got so in his head about failure that he had to retire from baseball. This is a person who could have been a Hall of Famer. He had a great career. And he ruined it because he was afraid of failure. He was afraid of being afraid of that thing. And it ruins his life. And we can't let that happen. Freud argues that children between 3 and 4 are most afraid of failure and punishment. And that's why we can have to tell children that it's okay to fail. Because if they think that when they fail, then they'll get punished, they're going to be afraid to fail. But they can't. That can't be, because everybody fails. You don't want to be afraid of something that's going to happen all the time, and it's going to make you more scared of being scared that you're going to fail. And that can't happen. When a person encounters a tragic thing, whatever we spoke about before, shalom bayis, loss of life, going off the derech, other familiar behaviors, it's shocking because deep inside, the concern that it could be them. So how do we deal with this? So he says the Bali Musar talk about 3 ways to overcome the Yitzhara. He says the first is awareness. You have to know your personality. You have to know your abilities. You have to know what triggers you. You got to know yourself. If that means taking a Cheshbon Nefesh, talking with a therapist, a social worker, you got to know yourself. What am I capable of? What am I all about? Number 2, the Bali Musar talk about conquering the Yitzhara. Learning to control and to curb the Yetzer. I have a detaiva to eat this piece of chocolate cake, even though I already had a piece of chocolate cake 5 minutes before. So we have to learn to control that, to not go and do that thing we have Yetzer for. And the third thing is to fix the Yetzer, tikkun ha-Yetzer, is to direct your Yetzer in a positive direction, to enjoy Torah mitzvos, to channel the Yetzer, not to stop the Yetzer, but to channel the Yetzer, to channel my drives towards positive things. With these 3 tools, he says, you can deal with yourself, you can be more calm, you can lower your fear, your anxiety over failure, and without these three tools, you'll feel less confident in dealing with yourself and will lead to the fear of failure. But if you know your tools, if you know what you're about, you have the tools to deal with failure, then failure won't be so scary anymore because you'll be prepared for when it happens. And he says, in the name of Rav Isaac Sher, his Rebbe, in the name of his Rebbe, the altar of Slobodka, in the name of his Rebbe, Rav Yisrael Salanter. Look at this beautiful line. He says, Habayahi lo hachet. Says Yisrael Salanter, the problem is not the sin, ela eich mismodzim ito. But what do you do with it? That's the problem. The problem is not sinning. The problem is not failing. The problem is that you don't know what to do when it happens. That's the issue. Don't be overcome by cheder failure. This is a pasuk we should all realize. And I think many of us are familiar with the pasuk, but I think we interpret it wrong. The pasuk says in Koheles, ki adam ein sadak ba'aretz asher yaseh tov liyachta. There is no person in the world who does good and does not sin. Says Shlomo Hoffman, the point of Shlomo Melech is that relax, because you know what? Everybody fails. Everybody messes up. Everybody has challenges, and that's not the issue. The issue is what do you do when you mess up and when you have a difficult situation. There's always a path and a method to come to deal with the Yetzer. Knowing yourself, your capabilities, your Yetzer Hara can be very calming. We're scared of chait, we're scared of failure, but we don't know what to do with ourselves. And this is a major yesod. You will be much happier. You'll be much more interested in taking chances. You'll be much more interested in meeting new people, in putting yourself out there, in trying new things, in exploring and growing, when you're prepared to fail and you know what to do with yourself after you fail. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. I don't mean to be depressing here. You're all going to fail at many things in life, Baruch Hashem. The issue is going to be, what are you going to do with yourself when that happens? You have the tools inside to know yourself and what to do when that occurs. Let's read here a beautiful piece from Rav Chaim of Elazhin in Pirkei Avos, and then we're going to end with some beautiful stories, okay? Is that good? Everyone likes stories, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's read this piece together. This is an amazing piece. Rav Chaim of Elazhin in Pirkei Avos, Dalet Chaf Beis. He says, V'amar ha-chaim lidun leide lehodia, ki amnam on she ha-aveira eino al derech nekama. First know that onash from Hashem is not nekama. Hashem is not like jealous. He doesn't have to get you back. Ooh, I forgot to make a bracha. Bam! Comes a lightning bolt. That's not how it works. Raku al aderech teishav enosh ad darkava tomer shuvu bnei adam kadesh yeshuvu. All difficulty in life, all onesh from Hashem, is just to nudge us in the right direction to do tshuva. Avalo al derech nekama. It's not revenge. The reason why there is din, there is judgments in the world, is so you should know that there is Hashem, and you should have Yirah Shemayim, as it says in the Chovos HaLevavos, in the Shar Avas Hashem, Sheyabosh mil Yirah Miborav, Beyos Yirah Hashem Alav Batuach Bechesed Al Kolam. That a person will be embarrassed to sin before Hashem, and know that Hashem has the best intentions in mind for you. Because yesh alav yiras Hashem, ein lo yiras shum davar. Avim eino yira me Hashem yisparach, huyre me habruim me harbe arios ve harbe dovim. This is such a beautiful line. He says the same thing. Says Rechaim V'lajin, we all have fears. The question is, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to have yiras shemayim and build your relationship with Hashem and be concerned that Hashem is the one who is in charge, who loves you more than anything? But if you don't have fear of Hashem, you're just going to be scared of lions and bears. So it's your choice, he says. It's up to you. You have pachad. Everyone here has pachad. Everyone here has fears. It's up to you to decide, what do you want to channel that into? Do you want to channel that into silly things that you can't control, like a lion might come out of the streets in Woodmere one day and attack you, which is clearly not going to happen? Or do you want to channel towards something that's reasonable in your relationship with Hashem? Because if you're not going to have Yirah Shemayim, you're going to channel that Yirah towards something else. So why not invest in Hashem? This is what Moshe says. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, what does Hashem want of you? Only to have Yirah Shemayim. So the Chazal are very bothered. Only to have Yirah Shemayim? Thanks, Moshe Rabbeinu. That was really helpful. Oh, the world's so simple. Just have Yirah Shemayim. Everything will be okay. What's Moshe Rabbeinu trying to do to me? Like, we get, yes, you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you're a big tzaddik. Oh, just have Yirah Shemayim. Just have a fear of Hashem and think about Hashem all the time, and the world will be very easy and everything will go according to plan. Easier said than done. Thanks, Moshe. So says Rechaim V'lajin, no. Ratzal Lomar. Kevin Sh'al Korcho Yeshlo La'adam Yirah Meharbe Devarim Raim. By force, the rule of law is, you will be fearful of things. You will have anxiety, you will have triggers, you will have things that will upset you during the course of your life. Hello, Tov. Is it not better? Lo lahafo chayir l'tov yiras Hashem es Hashem. Just focus on Hashem. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu means. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to us, guys, you're all going to have anxiety and fears about different things. Just focus on one thing. Instead of focusing on 10 things about, will my car start this morning? Will I get a job? Will there be a good shidduch? And what are my kids going to look like? Where am I going to send them to school? Instead of worrying about 20 things, why don't you just focus on one thing? Hashem. That Hashem's going to take care of everything. That's much easier. And then you don't have anything else to worry about. You just focus on your relationship with Hashem. And that is davar katan, meaning it's one thing versus 20 things. Take everything and channel towards Hashem. And he goes on to explain that Hashem is a merciful father and Hashem takes care of us. Fine. And that is the lesson over here. Good? Questions on this so far? Okay, let's talk. He's going to tell now a few stories. He's going to tell now a few stories about people, Gedol Yisrael, who channeled this, who took tragic events, who took challenges, and channeled them in beautiful ways. Listen to this. Now, I'm going to warn you here. This is a very challenging piece from Dessler. I'm not saying this. Rav Shlomo Hoffman's not saying this. Rav Dessler said this, okay? Rav Dessler, when he came to Eretz Yisrael after leaving England, he gave his first drasha in the early 1950s. And the first drasha he spoke about, where people came all over Israel to hear the famous Rav Eliyahu Dessler speak, was about the Holocaust. And Rav Dessler asked a stunned crowd. He said, and keep in mind, at that point, every single person in that room, including Rav Dessler, had lost immediate families in the Holocaust, family members in the Holocaust. Every single person had lost somebody. So I want you to be clear, Rav Dessler's not being insensitive. He asked the room, was the Holocaust a bracha or a klala? Was it a curse or a blessing? In Parshas Re'eh it says, Re anochi nosin lefnechem hayom, bracha uklala. Give before you today, blessing and curses. So says Rav Dessler, everything has to be either a bracha or a klala. What is a bracha? Says Rav Dessler, a bracha does not mean schar. It can't mean reward, because there's no schar in this world. Schar b'hai al-maleka. We don't get reward in this world. So when Hashem says, I'm giving you brach in front of you. Bracha doesn't mean a nice house and a garden and an apple tree in the backyard. That's not what it means, because Hashem doesn't give schar in this world. Rather, he says, bracha means opportunity. The translation of bracha means opportunity. Some people in life have a lot of bracha. What does that mean? They have a lot of opportunities. They're very wealthy, so they have a lot. What does wealth give them? Does wealth give them happiness? No, it gives them opportunities. So a person in life has limited wealth or limited bracha. It means they have limited opportunities. But that's what bracha means. Bracha means opportunities. Without a house, I can't put up a mezuzah. A house is a bracha, an opportunity to do mitzvos. Without money, I can't give tzedakah. Money is an opportunity, a bracha, to give tzedakah. And without children, I can't perform bris milah, the mitzvah chinuch. I can't give to other people. It's all opportunities. Bracha means opportunities. It's the possibility to serve Hashem. Hashem doesn't give tov or ra. Hashem doesn't give out cards that say this is good and this is bad. What was the Holocaust then, says Rav Dessler? So he told the room, if it increased your amunah afterwards, if a person went through it and increased your amunah, and it sharpened your relationship with Hashem, so then it's bracha, because you turned it into a bracha. You took the opportunity and turned it into a good thing. If it's not, and a person went off, and they left Yiddishkeit, and they disconnected from Hashem, then that was a klala for them. That reality was a klala, and it was a curse for them. Now, Shlomo Hoffman says he was shocked that Rav Dessler said this. The feelings of the Holocaust were very raw. A few years afterwards, everybody in the room had lost somebody, but Rav Dessler said it anyway. How could he speak like that? But later in life, Rav Hoffman said he was overwhelmed by the lofty level that Rav Dessler spoke to, that he had such an insight to look way, way beyond what was going on. Again, Rav Dessler, who lost family, to a room of people who lost families, he was able to reach such an understanding of Hashem. Now, this is me speaking here. I want to be clear. I'm not saying Dessler's right or wrong, if it's difficulty or not. But it's a perspective. It's a perspective on how we view opportunities. Every single thing in life is an opportunity. It's not tov or ra. It's an opportunity. This was an extreme example of how to take tsar, how to take challenges, failures, and to translate into avodas Hashem. What happens to a person in life is just possibilities. Pachad, says Rav Hoffman, is an opportunity to increase in avodas Hashem, to give up and to become broken. Whenever you have a challenge in life, the question is: this is an opportunity. Do I want to turn this into a bracha and come closer to Hashem, or do I want to turn this into a klala and to give up and to not get involved? That's story number one. Number two, the Panovich Rav. Rav Shlomo Hoffman says that he once was visiting by the Panovich Rav, and he saw the architectural plans for Panovich. And Rav Hoffman started smiling and giggling because he thought it was ridiculous. In 1940, whatever, in Eretz Yisrael, the biggest yeshiva, 150 people, and the Panovich Rav is sitting with architectural plans to build a yeshiva that holds 1,000 people. And he started laughing because it was the most ridiculous thing in the world. And the Panovich Rav said to Rav Hoffman, "You're right, it's a dream, but be'ezras Hashem, it will happen." Yom Kippur 1953, the first Yom Kippur in Panovich. Anybody ever seen Panovich yeshiva? Ever seen it? No B'nai B'rach trips? It's a massive building. It's huge. So Rav Hoffman davens in Panovich that year, and he's waiting online on Yom Kippur night to everyone to wish good yontif to the Panovich Rav. And he's waiting online, and the walk gets moving along. And when he gets up to the Panovich Rav stops the line, and he tells Rav Hoffman, "Come with me." The whole yeshiva and all of B'nai B'rach is waiting behind him, and he tells Rav Hoffman, "Come with me." And he leaves the front of the basement, and they walk out to the porch, this massive porch that goes around the whole perimeter of the yeshiva. And the Panovich Rav comes to the Rav and he says, "Come with me. I want to start counting tiles." Like those square Israeli tiles, right? "I want to start counting tiles." And he starts counting tiles from one end of the porch to the other. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, to the other end. And the number is some very large number. And he wants to show him how big the yeshiva was. And he told Rav Hoffman, "It's good to dream, and it's possible to make dreams come true." So Rav Hoffman was confused. Like, there's a time to give me a speech about how beautiful your building is, but it's Yom Kippur. People are waiting. We need to go and look at how many tiles are on Panovich right now. And then he understood that what Panovich Rav was telling him was a lesson for Yom Kippur. And the Panovich Rav was saying is that a person can dream about all types of things. You can dream about having Gashmias. You can dream about having Ruchnias. Right? We come to Yom Kippur and say, Hashem, I want a better year. I'm going to try better. I'm going to accomplish things I didn't have before. At the end of the day, don't laugh at that dream. Make it a reality. Just like Rav Shlomo Hoffman laughed at Panovich becoming the biggest yeshiva in the world, and it did. And the Panovich Rav took that dream and made a reality. We can do the same thing in Ruchnius as well. If you have a dream to accomplish something in Ruchnius, so don't laugh at it. Take advantage of it and make it a reality. The Panovich Rav felt that he was saved from the Holocaust for the shlichus of rebuilding Torah. And he used that challenge, that opportunity, and he made it a reality. In 1944, there was a meeting in Yerushalayim about the destruction of Torah going on in Europe and the difficult situation in Eretz Yisrael. And both Rav Zalman Zarutzkin and Rav Yitzchak Zalman Meltzer got up to speak and they cried about the difficult situation and what will be with the Torah? Torah Matele, what's going to be with the world of Torah now after the Holocaust? Then the Panovich Rav got up. This is the first time that the Panovich Rav had spoken in Eretz Yisrael after escaping the Holocaust. And he said, we have a promise. Lo tishkach mipi zarov. The Torah will not be forgotten from your children. The Torah is never in danger, said the Panovich Rav to the room. Instead, all of those who gathered at this meeting are lucky that they have been given the opportunity to raise Torah up and to give Torah up to the next generation, to spread Torah throughout the world. Don't lose that opportunity, said the Panovich Rav. And Rav Shlomo Hoffman said that speech changed the whole feeling in the room. Before the Panovich Rav got up, it was sad, it was depressing, there's no more Torah, no more yeshivas, no more Beis Yaakov, the whole Torah is gone. And then after that, the Panovich Rav taught the whole room, it's an opportunity. It's not a failure, it's not a klala, it's an opportunity to do something with it. He tells two more stories. Rav Isaac shared the Rosh Yeshiva Slobodka in Europe, then Bnei Brak, his Rebbe. He was in Switzerland for a medical reason, and then World War II broke out. He was unable to return to Slobodka, which was going to be destroyed, and he ended up making his way to Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Isaac Sher felt that the only reason he was saved from the Holocaust is because he had the koach of relating to and helping young people succeed. And he dedicated his entire life to that mission. So Shlomo Hoffman told the following story to show this. He was once sitting with his Rebbe in his house, having a meeting, and three gedolim walked into his house. Three very, very well-known gedolim walked into the house. And Rav Hoffman said to the distinguished guests, you know, how can I help you? So Shlomo Hoffman got up to leave. Like, oh, we have three gedolim here. I'm little old me here. I should leave. So Rav Isaac Sher put his hand on his arm and said, no, sit. He said, what can I help you with? And they said, we have a very, very urgent question about the Vad Hatzalah, about helping Jews in Europe and how to manage them, things like that. You know, this is post-Holocaust, but trying to get people where they need to go. We need your advice about certain things. So Rav Isaac Sher looked at the men and said that I have a meeting right now with this Talmud of mine. And I understand that we have a big concern. And when I'm done, I'll take the time to sit with you and we'll talk about these things. The impact that had on Rav Shlomo Hoffman was immense because he saw that his Rebbe had one goal, and that was to impact and to inspire young people. He viewed this as his mission. Even though Rav Isaac Sher lost his family in the Holocaust and people he knew were wiped out, he had a mission. An opportunity was given to him to help young people grow and to reach their potential. And yes, there were three big Talmidei Chacham in the next room, but you know what? I'm here for a mission, and that is to help young people, and that's what I'm doing right now. These people, the Panovich Rav, Rav Dessler, Rav Isaac Sher, they took opportunities and experiences to serve Hashem. Each and every one of us has to work on this, to take every challenge that we come across, not to be shocked, not to be shaken and to give up and to fail and to roll over, but to take those opportunities and to channel it towards what our purpose in this world is, to connect to Hashem and to make the world a better place. Okay? We'll stop here.